pleasure to follow Dr. Nelson on his presentation of wheat and soybeans, double cropping. What I'm going to look at today is relates to similar to a way of light interception is a subject of the solar quarter, what I've been trying, what the solar quarter's objective is. And what the solar quarter does is we try to maximize photosynthesis in any way, in a way that's a little bit somewhat different. But at any rate, let's look first at photosynthesis is, in fact, what I'd say is a major driver of yield in any of our crops. And certainly, Loomis and Williams said 90% of our yield comes from photosynthate-derived carbon compounds. But in that photosynthesis process, there's such item here as sunlight is the energy catalyst to make this all occur. So my presentation again is on sunlight and how we can make better use of sunlight so those chloroplasts that are in the chlorophyll molecules in the green leaf, and I mean every green leaf on the corn plant, not just the top leaves that we normally have in modern corn production, but I'd like to enable every leaf on that plant to capture as much CO2 as it can and combine that with the water to produce simple sugars and complex sugars as occurs in the process. Now, so I've proposed a paradigm shift, and indeed this is a paradigm shift, where we've placed our corn rows far enough apart so that light, so we can get a more uniform vertical distribution of incident sunlight on every leaf on the plant. To do that with corn, it's maybe 100 inches and grows normally 100 inches in height or so. About 52 inches between the corn rows does enable us to do a pretty good job of getting light to every leaf on the plant. That enables us to capture more CO2 and for the biosynthesis into more photosynthate-derived carbon compounds. Now, but one of the things we've observed there is that in this configuration we have, this is where if a farmer had 30-inch equipment, this configuration says we simply remove every other corn row and place it 7.5 inches from the other row, so we have a pair of twin rows on 60-inch centers. And then that leaves then a pretty nice 30-inch area in between the corn rows that I wonder if we could reproduce anything else there. That would really give us a boost if we could do that. And so we're proposing winter wheat and a legume in that winter wheat. Are a symbiotic crop that completes its peak demand for light before the corn plant begins its increasing demand for light. Now the key in this system is we've got to have a crop that does not compete with the corn crop for its demand for sunlight and moisture and nutrients. And so that's the mandate of any other crops could be used in between the corn rows. That may be preferable to wheat, I'm not sure, but this is the one we have. This is the one we have in our protocol. Now, this paradigm enables the mature chloroplast to capture more carbon dioxide and produce more photosynthates, and it enables the highest capacity reproductive sinks to really produce. Now, one of our primary selection criterion is actually on the hybrids that have that highest capacity reproductive sink. And then, of course, the vegetative sinks also then have access to more photosynthates. Now, and then the cultivar selection is site-specific, and then the production inputs then become variety-specific. Now, let's take a look at our treatments. At our treatments, we had 12 production environments. We had pre-screened a bunch, about 200 hybrids, and we find about 10% of those 200 hybrids look like they fit well in the system, and those are represented by hybrids B, C, and D. hybrid A did not look good in their preliminary screening trials as far as responding to this type of enriched light environment. So we thought for the purpose of the study, it'd be good to have one from each class in there, because one thing you want to make sure of, hybrid B, C, and D do compare favorably with anything else that we could be planting. And then we, of course, then each hybrid, when you're pushing everything you can do, does have different plant population thresholds, and we had a randomized block split plot. We split the first by hybrid, and then we split each hybrid then by plant population. We had two row width entries. The control was a single row on 30 or 36 inch centers. Some of the sites had 30 inch equipment, other sites had 36 inch equipment. That's what determined which of those it was. Then the treatment was twin rows on 60 inch where they had 30 inch equipment, or twin rows on 72 inch where they had 36 inch equipment. And in all treatments were north-south rows between 40 and 41 degrees north latitude. Now, here is what the response was over all of the environments and all plant populations thrown together. And we see that, you know, it shouldn't be any surprise that hybrid A really didn't like that the wide rows. And that's kind of what we would expect. But hybrid B, C, and D did seem to respond well to that configuration. Now, the pattern is just that the hybrid either responds to that or it does not respond to it. Now, we go to look at the eight highest yielding environments. We had a little higher yield than we had at 12 environments, of course, and you still had the same pattern. Hybrid A, of course, did not like the solar quarter. It yielded less. Hybrid B, C, and D did yield more. Then one of the things in that system, you know, that when we're looking at four plant populations, there are obviously two or three of those populations are probably suboptimal. So we'll take a look now at the yield response at the optimal population. There we had the same pattern again. The hybrids either responded to the treatment positively or negatively, and I'm very impressed, of course, with hybrid D. That was Prairie Stream 702, and B and C were from a DeKalb and a Cargill number. We started this before they were bought by the bigger company, and so we think that we have some results that might be unbelievable to those with anyone with any sensible minds. You know, who would think that we could produce as much corn on one twin row of corn as we could two single rows of corn? But if we select the varieties, we can. There's no question about it. If we select the varieties, we can do that. Now, these studies were done at one location, several locations in that one, and it's in 40 to 41 degrees latitude, and we do know that the latitude would make a difference in this response. So we did have some satellite sites. We went to 36 degrees to 45 degrees north latitude, and it does look like that. In each of those cases, we screened hybrids, and it does look like you can find these hybrids anywhere we've been if you look hard enough for them. But they're not. Some cases we had to get go through 15 or 20 hybrids to find one that would work. In other places, we could get them in six or seven hybrids. But the fact is, probably about 10% of the hybrids would look like B, C, or D. But I don't know any other hybrid that would look like D. I mean, it's just a phenomenal for this particular hybrid. Hybrid D goes flat in normal cornfields. It's not an acceptable, it's not a very good hybrid because the ear just cannibalizes the stalk. It just takes everything out of the stalk and the stalk won't stand. But in this environment, where you have the lower part of the plant producing photosynthase and carbohydrates, it stands very well. And so we've been kind of pleased with our, or surprised and pleased with their results. And now look at the population. Here's a population trend. Of course, we'd expect that's a trend. Now, hybrid B is typical. But here's the population response to hybrid D. And we thought 30,000 plants per acre was probably the optimum population, or at least that's the population we used as our standard population. And we noticed these hybrids did have a lot of flex, and so that's why we went to the lower population just to see what would happen. And with all the hybrids except hybrid B, except hybrid D, you know, they did take quite a yield hit with that. But hybrid D, it produced 200 bushel corn at 15,000 plants or 30,000 plants. It didn't seem to make any difference. Just put on larger and more ears at the lower population. Now, one of the things, if you noticed on our treatments, we didn't distinguish between the 72-inch treatments and the 60-inch treatments. We just threw them together as one, and that maybe there might be a flaw in doing that. But so I separated them out and compared in the different sites. These aren't comparable from one site to another, but the response is comparable. Is it the 36-inch versus 72-inch on the left gave a similar response to the 30 and the 60-inch with hybrid C. And which hybrid C is pretty representative of those hybrids in that. Now, as specifically demonstrated in the solar quarter floor experiments that I presented in 2005, we can produce other specifically chosen crops between the corn twin rows without a reduction in corn yield. Our approach has always been to select crops that had no negative impact on corn yield, and we have concluded that, of course, a crop like soybeans in between the corn rows doesn't work because the soybeans have an effect on the corn yield, and the corn yield has an effect on the soybeans. But use a crop like wheat, you know, the corn yield doesn't hurt the wheat yield, and the wheat yield doesn't hurt the corn yield. If we pay attention to not make sure the wheat swath isn't too wide, and we real simple in this is if we have 10-inch rows, wheat rows, and you plug three rows and plant three rows, you have across the field you have 30-inch swath of wheat, 30-inch fallow swath every 60 inches, and then you just plant the twin rows of corn in between those wheat rows. I don't mean to say just, because it requires some wheel track configurations to get that done, do that right. And ag engineering boys that are working on how to handle this do have a problem trying to figure this out. But I'm the agronomist, and I want to try to do what I can to increase max photosynthetic yield per acre. Now, the data I gave was as if there was nothing else that gave no impact, positive or negative, of the other crop, of the solar quarter floor crop. So the yields I gave were just for the corn per crop acre, per corn acre, per crop acre. Now, if you have half the field in wheat, it does look like maybe that half of the field area could be assigned to that wheat and the other one half to the corn crop. So the effective yield per acre was exactly double. If you accept that premise, the effective yield per acre, per crop acre, was exactly double what I showed on my previous slides. And that's real simply illustrated here, is if we, in conventional, we have half the field in corn, half the field in wheat and clover, and in the solar quarter system, the entire field, the entire area, is all in corn and wheat. And we're able then to get 2x corn yield out of the farm, or out of the area, and 1x wheat and clover out of it. And so using that method, I think it's something that I wish we could look at. And we see increased productivity can be achieved through the utilization of the solar corridor system. And so because sunlight is made available to more chloroplasts to produce more carbohydrates to meet sink demands through physiological maturity, and appropriately selected site-specific supporting practices maximize solar corridor benefits. We have increased yield, reduced lodging, increased sequestration of CO2, and potential to reduce soil erosion. And solar corridor floor crop options do exist, and that's what I say that ag engineering is working on. And I hope we can figure out how to harvest that cropping system. Thank you. Thank you so much.